from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org.
At the legislature today, the budget is once again the center of attention as members of the House of Delegates consider ways to redistribute declining lottery revenues. Outside of the Capitol, though, local health departments are preparing for a proposed 25% budget cut and the impacts it will have on the services they provide. And House Speaker Tim Armstead joins us to discuss his legislative priorities, including a repeal of the state's prevailing wage. Those stories coming up on the legislature today. Ashton Mara. Lawmakers are now a full week into this session, and so far, each chamber has approved a single bill without much debate. That debate, however, is bound to come as more controversial bills make their way to the House and Senate floors. Joining us this evening to share his take on some of those bills, House Speaker Tim Armstead. Speaker, thank you so much for being here.
Good evening, Ashton. How are you?
Good, thank you. Let's start with a bill that came out of the House Government Organization Committee today. It's a bill to replace this. To repeal the state's prevailing wage. This was attempted last year. You all decided to compromise instead and recalculate the wage rate. Why are we proposing this bill again?
Well, first of all, if we go back to why we felt it was necessary even to address it last year, in the private sector, individuals negotiate what they pay for projects. If you're building a hospital or you're building a home or whatever you might be building, that the actual free market decides those rates. But we have a prevailing wage rate in West Virginia that's much higher than those rates, and that's what's charged when we use taxpayer money to build a public building or a public project. So we felt it's very important that we be responsible with the taxpayers' money to make sure, and we want to pay a fair wage. We are not looking at trying to pay any wage that's not fair, but we do feel like we need to bring those rates back more in line with what the private sector is paying, because we're talking about taxpayers' dollars, and particularly in tight budget years like we have now. So that's why we felt it's important to do this. We tried last year to work out a compromise, as you mentioned, and to recalculate those wages using Bureau of Labor Standards statistics, which we feel are very accurate measures of what rates are being paid in the public sector and or in the private sector. And unfortunately, that did not pan out. The agency in charge of calculating those wages went back and used a survey again, which is what we've been using in the past. So we feel like it's important that we take the next step and actually bring those wages into line with what the private sector is paying.
Those on the opposite side of this issue say that there's no proof that it actually saves the state money. Other states have done this repeal and they haven't seen any savings from it. Where are you all getting your information that this will actually save taxpayer dollars?
Well, actually, when we actually had what took place last year, we had a period of I think 3 or 4 months that we did not have prevailing wage at all in the state. And during that time, there were some school projects and other projects that were put out to contract by the state and by local and city governments and county governments. And we were able to make some comparisons then from those. And we did find, and you know, I know there's obviously debate about what was calculated, what was included in those wages, but from my review of them, it certainly appears to me that there was a reduction in the amount that those projects cost. And that saved taxpayers money. And truly, I believe we will be able to go further with each of our tax dollars when it comes to building roads, which we all needs to be a priority in our state, schools, bridges, public buildings. We want to build as many of those and make those dollars stretch as far as they can, and that's what we're trying to accomplish.
So the Senate is set to vote on another bill related to the workplace tomorrow, the Right to Work bill. Assuming that it passes in that chamber, how will this be received by members of the House?
Well, I mean, obviously you never know a vote until there's a vote taken, but I will tell you that there were some concerns last year when it was discussed, and some of our members raised those concerns about is there real evidence that will increase employment in West Virginia? Is there a concern that it would reduce wages? So what we did is our new rule that we passed last year that allows us to ask the economy departments, business and economy departments at WVU or Marshall to undertake a study. We used that rule and we asked WVU to undertake a study over the past year. What that study found was that there would be an increase in employment in West Virginia. Whatever our rate of growth in West Virginia for employment would be, this would be 0.4% higher. And also GDP would increase. The other thing it found was that there was no evidence that it would in any way lower wages in West Virginia. And that was a concern that some had. So we really truly believe that this is evidence that this would be a positive step for West Virginia, that we would be able to employ more people in West Virginia. And let's be honest, when we've talked to those who look to employ people and to expand in the state, they have raised this issue as one of those issues that they look at when they look at West Virginia and other states that we compete with. And we have such a high unemployment rate at this time. We're last in the country in workforce participation. We need to take some bold steps. We realize this is controversial, and it's not an anti-union vote. It's not trying to attack unions. What we really feel like is the unions will be more accountable to their members, because if they have to truly compete for membership and try to convince workers that there's a benefit in them joining a union, they'll be more responsive to the members of that union. And so we don't consider this at all any type of anti-union vote or an anti-union issue, or certainly not an anti-worker. In fact, we believe it is a pro-worker provision that we're putting into law. And I really believe it will help employ people in West Virginia, and that's so important. It's what I think our priority from a legislative standpoint is, and I think it's a priority for West Virginians.
Let's move on to the budget a little bit. It's obviously one of the biggest issues this session because it is such a tight budget year, and there's also a big gap that the legislature will have to fill by the end of this budget year that ends in July. Governor Tomlin is proposing two tax increases, a telecommunications tax and an increase of the state's tobacco tax. Will the House consider those increases?
Well, let me say this. I mean, I think that there is obviously we have some economic challenges. That's going to be, it's difficult. We're going to have to make some very tough choices this year. And we're up to the task. We are already in the process of going through this budget, looking at areas where we can make reductions, where we can increase efficiencies, and to be able to offset these reductions. These are reductions that are caused by the war on coal, reductions in terms of the downturn in our energy industry and the ripple effect those have had. So what I would say about the governor's proposals is, before we would take up any type of a tax increase, we want to really look at where we can make those cuts. And it's our hope that we'll be able to do the cuts that are necessary in a very responsible way. And we have some other ideas that we're working on that we believe will be able to shift some funding to higher priorities within our budget. But it truly is setting priorities, and that's what we need to do in this budget. We understand it's a challenge. We understand some tough decisions are going to have to be made. But it's also an opportunity for us to make our budget more efficient, to set the priorities that the people of West Virginia expect us to set. There are certainly things that are truly the crucial role of government, and we will certainly fund those. But there are other things that we may not have the money to fund. And so I think working West Virginians are making tough choices in their own household budgets, and we need to do the same thing in West Virginia. So those other proposals are under discussion, but they're part of a larger discussion of looking at other alternatives, and I certainly hope that we can find some of those alternatives that will get the support of both parties.
Mr. Speaker, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I want to let you talk about your new substance abuse committee focused on those issues. What will that committee do?
Well, that's an 11-member committee that will take all the proposals, both the governor's proposals, the legislature's proposals, look at prevention, look at treatment, look at punishment of those who are dealing drugs in our communities. This will really give us an opportunity to hone in on the solutions to that. We have a lot of talented people, and the The chair of that committee is our chair of health, Dr. Ellington. The vice chair is Dr. Stansberry. We have a number of people who have a great deal of talent, and that's what we need to do to attack this drug problem, because it's hurting too many of our families, too many of our communities.
That's a committee that we will certainly be following. Speaker Armstead, thank you so much for your time this evening.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
As the speaker just discussed, a repeal of the state's prevailing wage is making its way through the House chamber again this year. Last year, the controversial proposal ended in a compromise agreement to recalculate the wage. But the majority is once again taking on the issue, hoping to save money for the taxpayers. The prevailing wage is the rate of hourly pay and benefits the state pays workers on taxpayer-funded construction projects, like those currently underway on the Capitol complex. Last session, the GOP majority proposed a repeal of the wage, but compromised and passed a bill that called for a recalculation of the rate. Now, the majority is taking a second shot at passing a repeal bill, which Democratic delegate Isaac Spinagel is vehemently against.
West Virginia's annual household income is 49th in the nation. So why in the world do we want to drive down wages further so we can get below Mississippi? It makes no sense whatsoever. This will only hurt the economy in the state of West Virginia.
Delegate Gary Howell chairs the Chamber's Government Organization Committee, which was the first to take up the prevailing wage repeal. Howell says the opposition's arguments that a repeal would lower wages, allow companies to bring in out-of-state cheap labor, or hurt union workers are false.
One of the misnomers is that this is affects the unions. It doesn't. They're under contract, so their wages do not change. They've negotiated that. And the truth of the matter is it doesn't bring people in from out of state companies, like they say. Of the letters that we've received in against or support of the bill, 100% of the letters supporting the bill have all come from in-state.
Howell believes not only will a repeal of the wage save taxpayer dollars, he says it will also create jobs in West Virginia because the state will be able to stretch its dollars further.
Those are jobs for those West Virginians that can't find work. We're going to see a lot more.
But just like the debate over a proposed right-to-work bill, there are studies that support Delegate Spinagel's opinion as well. That's why he says both right-to-work and a prevailing wage repeal must be stopped to protect West Virginia workers.
We have both business and labor joint, which is very rare, saying these are bad bills for us in the state of West Virginia. So why does this attack on working people and working families in the state of West Virginia want to be continued? It makes no sense to me.
The House Government Organization Committee passed the prevailing wage repeal bill this afternoon. It now goes back to the House floor for the full chamber's consideration. The state's budget is always the final bill approved by lawmakers before they end their legislative work for the year. But even though that vote won't come until the end of March, members of the House Finance Committee are already looking for ways to deal with declining revenues. As Liz McCormick reports, today the focus was on lottery funds.
The West Virginia Lottery Commission was created in 1985 and since has generated $22.1 billion in gross revenue from the state. More than $8 billion of that revenue has gone to support senior programs, education, and tourism. Representatives from the Lottery Commission presented their budget to the House Finance Committee this morning and discussed ways the legislature could help the industry be more competitive with surrounding states while helping to balance the budget by the end of the 2016 session. John Myers is the commission's acting director. He says 2007 was the lottery's peak year because West Virginia had a gaming monopoly over nearby states like Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Ohio. But he says today that's changing as those states are building casinos of their own.
We're again being challenged by more competition as Maryland adds the National Harbor Casino. And this is going to compete against our largest casino that we have at Charlestown.
51% of the people who go to the Hollywood Casino in Charlestown are from Virginia. 29% come from Maryland, and only 10% come from in-state. Delegate Paul Espinosa, a Republican from Jefferson County, questioned how much of an impact a new casino that's being built in Maryland would have on the Charlestown resort.
What are you anticipating will be the impact of the opening of that casino on Hollywood Casino there at Charlestown and in turn on our West Virginia revenues?
Well, as far as an actual dollar, I'm not going to be able to pull that off the top of my head.
No.
But
percentage-wise, I mean, have you heard any percentages or?
Well, we're kind of looking at a 10% cut, but One of the things we found when we had the experience like with Mountaineer, and they opened the track in Pennsylvania at the Meadows, and then they turned around and opened one in Ohio, we got hit pretty hard with that first opening in Pennsylvania. And so we may have overestimated a little bit the impact that Ohio would have, thinking they would take the same amount. But when Ohio opened, they also took back from the Meadows some of the customers that had left us to go up there. So we're hoping that we're going to see the same thing there, that people that are currently, you know, driving up to go to the casino in Maryland and maybe not driving by to go to Charlestown like they used to, some of those National Harbor, the people that will go to National Harbor will be those other players from Maryland and not so much on us.
Lawmakers also discussed the future of the Racetrack Modernization Fund. Lottery revenues each year are set aside in the fund to help casinos pay for updated video lottery games, helping to keep them competitive with out-of-state casinos. However, Governor Tomlin's Cabinet Secretary Bob Kiss says the Racetrack Modernization Fund will be going away.
The Modernization Fund, which is going to expire anyway, even under current law, is not something that was ever intended to be in place permanently. I'm sure you can hear differing opinions, but the governor believes that it can be ended now, and we'll make a proposal to do so.
Delegate Marty Gearhart, a Republican from Mercer County, asked John Myers, the Lottery Commission's acting director, how lawmakers could help increase gaming revenue for the state.
The Modernization Fund has been in place for a little while, and that that inability to compete is the same mantra that comes before this committee every year. So removing that from the mix, because obviously that hasn't changed our ability to compete or the fact that we bemoan new competition. What else is there? What is there that we can do as promoting an industry that we're engaged in to be successful? Because it appears to me, whatever it is, we're not doing it because we are seeing a continued decline in revenue.
Well, there are things we are looking at that are, you know, and there are things you don't jump into and right off the bat. But iLottery, at some point, we'll have to find new ways to deliver our product, whether it be over a cell phone or whether it be able to sell it at the gas pump like you do with the purchase of your gasoline for lottery products. Then there's things, what they're calling iGaming, which at some point, you know, they're possibility of having online poker and some of the things, the fantasy sports. We're watching that very close because there's been some legal challenges in New York as well as in Illinois, and certainly we don't want to get into them and have the legal challenge and the cost of having to defend that. So there's, I won't say we're not doing anything, but at the same time, I don't think, I won't say we're not doing anything. But at the same time, I don't think we're in a position to jump in feet first right yet.
So. No legislation was proposed at today's House Finance meeting, but lawmakers say they will be thinking of ways they can improve the state's revenue through the Lottery Commission. For the Legislature Today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
Jeff Kessler is a Democrat from Marshall County. He was first appointed to the West Virginia Senate in 1997 to represent the state's second senatorial district and was elected to the position in 1998. Before the Republican Party took control of the chamber in 2015, Kessler served as the Senate president from 2011 through 2014. Before his time as president, Kessler served for nearly a decade as chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Senator Kessler is a father of five with ages ranging from 26 to just a year old. He jokes he's the only member of the legislature that has children in college and in diapers. David Evans was first elected to the House of Delegates in 2012. A Republican, he represents the House's 4th District from Marshall County. Delegate Evans chairs the House Committee on Homeland Security. He's a retired teacher and track coach of Cameron High School and a former member of the Cameron Sanitary Board. Delegate Evans ran the Boston Marathon in 1987 and again in 2006. At one time, the delegate owned 15 Beagles, but says now he's down to just 7.
Michael Farrow represents the state's 4th House of Delegates District from Marshall County. He was elected to the House in 2008. Delegate Farrow serves as the Assistant Minority Whip and the Minority Chair of the House Committee on Industry and Labor. Farrow is a retired teacher and coach. David Pethley is a Democrat from Wetzel County. He was first elected to the West Virginia House of Delegates in 1998 and served until 1992. He was elected again to represent the state's 5th House District in 1998. Before Republicans took control of the House in 2015, Pethley served as the chair of the House's Committee on Pensions and Retirement. Delegate Pethley is a sports fan who cheers for the Mountaineers and the Pittsburgh Pirates. He says his favorite restaurant while staying in Charleston is the Fifth Quarter.
Alongside declining lottery revenues, West Virginia lawmakers are having to deal with declining tax revenues as well, making it more and more difficult to fund the basic programs and services hundreds of thousands of West Virginians rely on. Today, it's local county health departments that are trying to grapple with their proposed 25% budget reduction. Rob Engel reports.
The Executive Council for the West Virginia Association of Local Health Departments met Wednesday to discuss the effects of the proposed $4 million in funding cuts to local public health services for fiscal year 2017, as outlined in Governor Tomlin's budget proposal to the legislature last week. Council members fear this 25% reduction in funding will not only have huge consequences for daily operations, but also much more serious ones for citizens who rely on public health services. Michael Kilkenny is the physician director at Cabell-Huntington Health Department, who says part of the responsibility of local health departments is to monitor the general population for threats to public health.
The proposed cuts would really cripple our surveillance efforts. We are mandated to watch for specific diseases, and some of these diseases are a nuisance, but some of these diseases are deadly. If we stop watching for those diseases will spread. People will get sick, and some of those people will die.
Kilkenny believes these cuts will end up costing the state money in the long run.
I think that everyone's well aware that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And if we stop watching, if we delay our response to any disease outbreak, then we're going to pay the price on the other side by treating more people.
Wednesday's meeting brought health administrators and practitioners from around the region to discuss a contingency plan if the cuts are sustained.
Many people voice concern that there is a misconception about what public health services actually do. Now, these are not individual services, but rather services designed to promote and protect the health of a community. For example, managing an infectious disease outbreak.
As Monongahela County's executive health director, Lee Smith, says are on the rise in West Virginia.
Sexually transmitted infections are certainly on the uptick in West Virginia, and some are related or co-infected with HIV. Ebola, MERS, dengue, chikungunya, and now Zika are all part of our vocabulary. West Nile is around. So all of these are diseases that we have to deal with, and you don't get these services anywhere else. They're not at hospitals. They're going to treat the active patient, but no one's going to do the surveillance. No one's going to do the monitoring other than public health.
While many county administrators are pleading with Governor Tomlin to prevent the cuts, ultimately it's the state lawmakers that will decide whether to follow through with his proposal. One member of the legislature, Republican Senator Chris Walters, is proposing a bill that will help the state pay for local health department services. His proposal calls for a reduction in the number of county health department administrators to save the state money and help continue to pay for much-needed services.
The bill is a regionalization bill. Now, it does not regionalize the health departments per se because it leaves the health departments in their localities. However, it regionalizes the administration. Currently, we have 49 administrators for health departments across the state of West Virginia. And I feel that if we did a regionalization of the administrators, we could start pulling resources together and have these health departments start billing insurance, where a lot of them don't do that. So currently they're just living off of a line item of taxpayer dollars and not actually billing the insurance companies where they'd be able to bring in money as well.
This bill also has another provision that creates needle exchanges at rural health departments across the state. Walter says he expects the bill to be introduced to the Senate tomorrow. For the Legislature Today, I'm Rob Engel in Charleston.
Tomorrow on our show, we're joined by the minority leaders of both chambers, Senator Jeff Kessler and Delegate Tim Miley. Also tomorrow, members of the state Senate will put a proposed right-to-work bill to a vote. You can watch that floor session live on the West Virginia Channel and on our website at 11 a.m. That's at wvpublic.org. This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, working to double the degrees produced annually in our state by 2025. Through increased opportunities for West Virginians to earn the credentials today's economy demands. The High Technology Foundation, building a stronger West Virginia, online at wvhtf.org. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.